Well, good evening, everyone, and thanks for joining us for the March 11th council briefing. We have a handful of items to go over with you tonight. The first item that we'd like to start off with is a discussion about parking, some of the issues that we're having, and a couple of the ideas that we have moving forward. Probably not a surprise to any of you that since the first of the year, we've fielded quite a few calls for problematic parking. And the one that's most prominent in the community is out at Sunshine Park and Playground, where we've got people that are jumping the curb, parking in grassed areas, in some cases maybe even driving over sidewalks in areas where the children play. We have with us tonight not only Commander Eric Shaughnessy, but we also have Sergeant Keith Brown. Sergeant Keith Brown has been working on the weekends and is very familiar with that location as well as others around the city where we're seeing parking issues. So if there were questions that you wanted to get or hear him tell about some of the things that we're doing, he can certainly come up and speak to that. But one of the things that's been noted is that our parking citations are relatively low in comparison to what they're doing in other communities. As an example, Atlantic Beach has a $50 across-the-board citation for a parking violation. Neptune Beach has parking fines that are $35. Jacksonville, the fines range depending on the situation, but it's anywhere from $15 to $50. And ours are $25 and have been for some time. So one of the things that the police department has suggested is that if council were willing to consider increasing what is currently our parking citation from $25 to something higher, maybe put it into the $35 to $50 range, that may be a reason for people not to illegally park. As Sergeant Brown has indicated, for a lot of people who come to our park facilities and they end up illegally parking, to them $25 is just the cost of doing business. So they just leave their car there for 2-3 hours. They understand that they're gonna have to pay $25 when it's all said and done. The second thing that we've started kicking around is putting up tow-away zone signs. And Chief Smith's unavailable here this evening, but he and I had a conversation where he indicated the last time this had been discussed was probably in excess of a decade ago. And at that point in the time, the city council was a little hesitant to look at raising the parking fees or putting in tow-away zones because they did not want to impact the Jacks Beach residents that are parking at city facilities. I think if any of you have been down to Sunshine Park and Playground, or as Sergeant Brown would say, Wingate on a weekend, and possibly Gonzales when it's all completed, we're going to have potentially a lot of different parking problems that we're going to be dealing with. And we wanted to have a discussion with you and see what your thoughts were about raising the parking citation fee and potentially putting up tow-away zone signs in key locations as determined by police department and parks and rec as areas where children and parents congregate and or move through our facilities to make sure people aren't blocking or potentially run into an issue where someone's being hit by a moving vehicle.
Okay, Sergeant, question.
Come on up, Keith.
Come to the hot seat. On the parking citation, I remember I got a ticket a few years back.
Please tell me you've paid it already.
No, it's collected. So I just wondered if you know. The question was: is there when you get in parking citations, is there options as to what type of citation is going to be? Like if someone is parked in the 2-hour limit and they've been there 6 hours. Or if they're actually parked legally, is it going to be a higher ticket?
The standard across the board rate is $25 unless it's a handicap ticket. All right. If it's a handicap ticket, it's a $250 fine, and that's pretty much set by the state. But our local parking violations, if we write it on the local parking citation for Jacksonville Beach, no matter the type of parking violation or how long you've been there, it's $25.
Do you think it'd be
better? while you're on that, to interrupt you really quick, sorry, Fernando. If you get a ticket from our downtown parking service, how much is that ticket?
The downtown parking service, if you have a violation in a paid lot, right? That citation, and I spoke with Commander Bingham this afternoon. That fine during regular hours is a $42 fine, plus the $7 parking fee that you're being assessed because you didn't pay your parking. If it is on a holiday or special event type weekend, It is a $47 fine and the $12 parking fee that you would have been assessed for that day for the paid lots.
Now, to your point on the fine, 25 or raising it, do you think if someone was to, when someone was to park, like at the Sunshine Park, block in a sidewalk, I don't think that's a $25, $35 ticket. I think that should be a little bit more just because it's more of a nuisance and just very disrespectful, I think. Now, if in a parking spot, I think the parking citation merits the amount, but if we were to do across the board, someone that's actually parking illegally and just saying...
Well, when we're talking about illegal parking, and I don't want to confuse the paid lots with everything else, okay? The paid lots, you're going to get that citation if you don't pay your parking fee, all right? You can be parked between the lines and otherwise legally parked, and if you didn't pay your meter fee, you're going to get that citation. What we're seeing everywhere else is people jumping the curb, pulling onto the grass. And people are like ants. If they see one person do it, everybody else is going to do it. The issue that we faced on February 24th, people were pulling down the Horn Street side of the park on the other side of the water plant down there, jumping the curb, driving into the park, driving over a sidewalk, and then parking on the grass. And if there would have been more space, more cars would have been there, but I think there were like six or seven cars that were able to fit down there, and also low-speed vehicles. Low-speed vehicles are just as guilty of it as well. So in that instance, that particular area, there's nowhere is there posted, like Mike was saying, tow-away zone. It just says no parking, all right? So the most that we can do is write the citation for the violation. And as I posed it to Chief Smith, who ironically called me an hour after we dealt with that, how much have you paid for an event anywhere to park, whether it be downtown Jacksonville, whether it be Orlando, whatever? You've paid in excess of $25 probably to pay to go to a special event. That's what these people are. Do I have to move my car? I can't, you know, I would like you to move your car. Well, I'll get my ticket when I get back. If I can tow it, now they're sitting there, the inconvenience of my car being towed, $125 tow fee, this, that, and the other. Now that's going to start bringing about the enforcement and the compliance that we want.
Do we have a contracted TOL rotation?
We do.
Okay.
Well, no, just the reason I asked about the paid lots was because if we do an across-the-board raise of a ticket, the ticket fee, then that would go up too, right?
I can't speak to that because I don't know the workings of the contract
okay.
that we have.
Because I think it's our ticket plus an administrative fee is how they get to that $41. So.
If the council were amenable to considering raising the ticket fee for non-paid parking locations, we take a look at both in conjunction to make sure that we were as close as possible. It sounds like what Keith was indicating, the $42.90 plus the $7 processing puts you at $49.90.
Which I think is a healthy
Or about 60 if it's during the So if we were to go to 50 across the board, I'm just throwing that out there.
It's pretty
then we're going to be pretty close.
Well, I think it needs to be a hybrid of some sort, kind of what you alluded to. You know, maybe an increase and then also some signage wherever it applies.
So as somebody who lives right there, part of the problem is for the park and its size, it doesn't seem to have adequate parking. And I'm just, it's my observation. So, if we eliminate all of the people creating their own parking spots, it's probably not going to eliminate the demand. And so therefore they'll find, you know, it's kind of like stepping on a balloon, right? So my thought is, or what I'd like us to think about is if we're not, if looking at parking isn't, if there's not some way to provide some relief on parking there, then what we're going to have to also then figure out is how we deal with what will be either nuisance into the neighborhoods or increasing resident dissatisfaction, because the park is a wonderful park.
It goes somewhere.
So it's going to happen. So I don't personally believe that just increasing the fines or putting up tow-away signs will, in totality, fix the problem. I think it'll change the problem.
Mm-hmm. We do have our Parks and Rec director here. He's working with one of our engineering consultants to evaluate putting some additional parking on the south side of the fence line, south of the park.
Because it is a very active parking area today.
And I think one of the things that Jason would say as well, he'd probably echo what I'm about to say, is that post-COVID pandemic, the park system in total has gotten a lot more use. People have gotten outside. Couple that with a brand new playground at Sunshine Park, and you've got a good percentage of people coming to that facility who aren't from Jack's Beach. You have people that are driving 10 to 15 miles to come to Sunshine Park and Playground for everything from the skate park to attend the birthday party to take their kids to the playground. And a lot of times there's multiple events that are occurring on the OmniTurf field out there as well. Everything from fitness classes to flag football to soccer camp to something else. Multiple all going on at the same time. Yep. It's just really kind of exploded.
Wonderful, and we have to deal with ramifications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Victims of our own success.
May I give them an overview of that particular Saturday?
Absolutely.
So that particular Saturday, it was Saturday of February 24th, and we had already dealt with Sunshine Park as early as 10 o'clock in the morning. It was already at capacity. And I found myself on the north end of the city up on Seagate, and as I'm driving down, I see the bunch of cars there at Fletcher Middle School. Fletcher High is playing baseball, the baseball stadiums in our city. As I drove down the big field by Boys and Girls, 500 people there for, I can't remember if it was flag football or soccer, but you know, they make little miniature, right. And there are kids and parents and grandparents, and cars are parking everywhere. So then I started to think, I'm like, what else is going on? I remember driving past one church and I saw they had a banner. So I went back over there. They had some type of canine event. And there was probably upwards of 200, 250 people there. Just because I drove over to Gonzales Park, there were people playing pickleball on the pickleball courts and they weren't even open yet, mm-hmm. right? And there were people lined up to play pickleball, right? And that goes to your comment and about what Mike said. There's going to be a problem at Gonzales Park, right?
And especially when the townhomes come in, because those people are going to be parking in the Gonzales Park parking spaces too.
Right.
Yeah.
So the festival hadn't even started yet. The first festival of the season started at noon. So people are arriving for that. I drove over Pier parking lot, full. Oceanfront Park, full. Then I drove over to Wingate. Baseball, softball, all going on. Golf, gorgeous day. People were pulling up on the curbs, pulling up on the grass. All right, then you got the dog park. Then factor in South Beach Park or Sunshine Park. All right. And it was ironic that I pulled a rookie aside that's in training and I said, for you to understand what's really going on right now, start at the north end of the city and start driving. And that doesn't count the people coming out here going to the restaurants and the shopping centers and this, that, and the other. And then my phone rang at 12:15 in the afternoon and it was Chief. And I answered it like this. Let me guess. Parking? And he started laughing. Right? And that's exactly what it was. So that's when I mentioned some of the things that we've talked about over the years. And it's just, you know, but Mike's brought it up. Some neighborhoods are already adversely affected. If you live along First Street or Second Street, once the pier parking lot fills up, once the end zones fill up, people are parking along the avenues, along, you know, anywhere from Beach Boulevard down to 16th Avenue South and North. They're pulling into the neighborhoods, mm-hmm. okay? It's already happening now. And if you could have taken a 5,000-foot snapshot of what the beach looked like at that particular time, you would have went, wow. And we're not even in summer.
I was going to say, imagine when the weather gets really nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, the challenge is we're at the beach. I don't think we'll ever have enough parking for the people who want to come out here. That's the challenge. Mm-hmm. Whether it's the beach or whether it's restaurants or whether it's Gonzales or whether it's Sunshine Park. And yeah, we
and of each of those that have their own unique challenges.
Right,
so you
right.
can't really pump them all together, although they each have their...
And the other one that hasn't popped up yet, but I heard it a little bit over the weekend, the boat ramp.
Oh, we're already working on that one.
Yeah, we're changing.
But remember, too, and this is only a minor impact, the weekend before that had been a total washout.
Right.
So I have a feeling a lot of stuff got compressed. And that canine event at One Jack's Church, they have two huge surface parking lots. Fletcher has multiple surface parking lots. The problem is people don't want to walk the extra block to go get their exercise. So I do support raising the ticket price. I just want to be cognizant of pushing up the downtown paid parking ticket. But I do think we need to do some education, and we've talked about this. All of those leagues, and I don't know if there's anything we can do to reduce the demand. We really can't do a lot to impact the supply, but I don't know if we can push leagues to different places for different things, the gym classes to other places where we might have more more available parking, but is do some education, do some, and you have a contact person for each of those leagues. There's a coach or there's a team parent or whatever that we can hopefully communicate that out to them that we are cracking down on ticketing. It does push them out into other areas, but hopefully they'll find a legal spot to park to go to their kids' game.
And all those neighborhoods around, it is legal to park.
The downside is people don't want people parking in front of their house.
Well, yeah. That's, I mean...
And there's kids playing in this.
You know, so, yeah. Legal to park there, though.
So, my assumption is... Their yard that's not their yard. So my assumption is the solution has to be a multi-pronged approach. Right? Like, clearly, we don't need people driving on the parks. And so, you know, having an appropriate response to that is, I think, is something... You know, I would personally support, and if that's towing, that's great. I don't know that I'm a big fan of, like, towing if they're, you know, in the other types of parking where they're just parking poorly or badly, but clearly when they're not in a real spot on the grass, I'm 100%, you know. But we also have to look at parking and see, is there anything we can do? And candidly, you know, on that south side, even if you, and I'm not an expert in any of this stuff, but even if you lose a little bit of the park to create a little bit more parking, that probably helps us because... The park can't support how many people they can get, or the park can support more people that can park there. So, you know, I just think all of our solutions have to be kind of multi-pronged, and, you know, whatever an appropriate fine is an appropriate fine. But I just don't want to just, we can't just increase the punitive side. Mm-hmm.
I recall there being that property on the south end of the park, but how much is it? I don't remember how much is it. How many spots are we talking there?
Well, the big thing that Jason's roughly working on with the engineer is moving the fence further to the north so that you can put cars in north to south as opposed to parallel parking east to west.
Even if
it's just enough to do them all on the diagonal, that would still be beneficial. So I don't know if you've got a number, Jason, if you want to come up.
Please throw out the road then.
No, we don't have a number, but in talking with the design consultant, he's thinking that as opposed to diagonal, just directly bringing them in.
Absolutely.
And that will create more spaces. But to your point, Mr. Wagner, we are taking a multi-pronged approach. One of the things we're doing, we are going to not allow the I-9 football program. That's been a big factor in this parking on a Saturday morning. They were grandfathered in because they had, you know, made a lot of donations to the park prior to the turf being built in the past. So we're going to move them to Wingate on a Sunday, which would help alleviate that kind of problem.
And they're happy with that, or are we about to start getting phone calls?
Well, no, we're still negotiating that with them, Mayor, but we do think they understand. They, you know, didn't resist moving from South Beach.
Okay.
So.
Fernando, you had a...
No, but the parking, just to get a better understanding that we're talking about, it's Ponce de Leon Street?
Ponce de Leon, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
It's for the worst case day, like, kind of what Keith was describing, and that's always going to be a problem and will be in a few years as well, right, regardless if we increase. So hard to solve for that, but I agree, I think, multiple things. Try to approach it from multiple angles and... do what we can. That sounds like it'll be helpful, Jason. Yeah. For sure.
The other thing at Gonzales, we do anticipate that activity is going to increase. That was the whole purpose around the design. Yeah. But with the pickleball, if we go to an online booking system, that might limit, you know, people just showing up and, you know, create a definite demand for that. So.
Many parking
Why
spots
are you shaking
open.
Your head?
I'm envisioning pickleball fights.
Yeah. Jason, how many parking spots will it open on?
On Ponce de Leon. If they're able to move the fence line north. And
don't know that, Mr. Mazur. I think it's about 170 feet. And I think
average
that,
parking yeah. space is about 9 or 10 foot yeah. wide.
9.5 is what's in our code.
Yeah.
So, and keep in mind, you're not really gaining new parking spaces because they're already parking there illegally. You're just making it formal and maybe gaining a handful of spaces if you straighten out and create north-south parking as opposed to right now they're on the diagonal. Most of them are parking on the diagonal.
I wonder if the neighbors live right across the street. I think we should maybe talk to them, let them know, hey, this is about to become affordable
yeah,
parking
spots. Yeah, we'll reach
spots.
Out to them for sure.
Just to let them know, I think it's better to communicate with them than
yeah.
receive emails and phone calls and have upset neighbors. Like, why would you do this and you didn't tell us? So I think communicating with them would be good.
Understood.
Yeah. We would even do not the volunteer, others that aren't here, but, you know, because I'm pretty close to there, too, we could do something there to work for an hour or something, invite the neighbors there if they're interested. I mean, we've seen how positive those type of things are.
We'll work up something and let you all know when we're ready to communicate with the residents out there. But I'm hearing a consensus to take a pronged approach.
Mm-hmm.
Both parking, tow-away zones where appropriate, education, work with our leagues, try and disperse them, and also look at increasing the parking at South Beach if we can.
Yeah, I was at Sunshine Park Friday afternoon, and there was a golf cart driving on the...
And did you say in there increase the fine?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll take a look at what makes sense in terms of both our existing ordinance or resolution for the parking fee as well as the paid parking and see if they both need to come back or just one. Because again, if we're targeting 50, I think $49.90 versus 50 is right in the ballpark. We may not need to do anything for the paid parking citations. Okay. That takes care of item number one. We'll move on to item number.
Can I just ask, when
sure.
we're talking about like the towing, is that for the whole park or for those areas that you obviously should be?
It would be for areas that we sign as tow-away zones. We would not just tow people for jumping a curb and parking in a grassed area, but if they're parking in a grassed area that is right next to or parked over a sidewalk where people are meant to
Great.
Go, those are the types of areas that we would mark as tow-away zone, park at your own risk.
I don't know, sometimes those signs give people the idea of, oh, I could just park here. what are the odds they're gonna tow me? So maybe that could be like a later.
But as a general rule, usually when the tow truck arrives and starts hooking up one car, all the cars.
Yeah, that'll solve the problem really quick.
Oh, we're not allowed to park there? No. From there to there is off limits.
Yeah.
Next item we wanted to talk to you about is Vista Del Mar. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the majority of council has probably been contacted over the past year by residents of Vista Del Mar. I'll ask Dennis to come up to the table on this one. Vista Del Mar is an interesting situation. Their parking lot has a stormwater inlet that collects stormwater from their parking lot as well as some of our street runoff that goes onto their property into the parking lot. From there, it all traverses through a stormwater pipe that goes to the east, leaves their property, and then comes to an exit east of the dunes out in the beach. It's one of our beach outfalls, so to speak. One of the things that the board or the representatives for Vista Del Mar has asked us is, can we come to some type of an agreement between city and Vista Del Mar as to what long-term maintenance of the situation should look like? And Dennis has a big three-ring binder with
two of them
of anything and everything Vista Del Mar outfall that you've ever wanted to know about. If you ever want to look at them, But in talking with it, you know, one of the things that I expressed to Director Barron some time ago was that when we start talking about the infrastructure leaving private property and coming into the public domain, the state and other types of federal agencies really don't care about the private versus public at that point. They're going to come and knock on our door, and they're going to say, you need to address this, take care of it, because it's in a public domain. So one of the things that we'd like to see if there's a consensus for moving forward is that the city will maintain that infrastructure from the private property, public property line into the public domain, while Vista Del Mar maintains the infrastructure that is on their private property. And that would be kind of the gentleman's agreement going forward.
Is that not how it is now?
There have been occasions where we've gone onto the private property and helped unclog the stormwater inlet that's on their property. To be honest, there's some question as to whether we should be doing that. We've done it in the past. It doesn't necessarily mean it was right. It doesn't mean we should do it going forward. But clearly, once the pipe leaves the private property and enters the public domain, everyone's going to view that as a public infrastructure, and we should be maintaining that going forward. I have had conversation with Mr. Steve Taylor from Vista Del Mar. He may be the individual that's reached out to some of you. And I don't know if he's here. He's not. No. But we told him that we'd be bringing this to council to have the conversation. They would like to do some type of an agreement that probably doesn't need to be more than a letter, to be honest with you. But that's our recommendation, is that we continue to maintain the pipe and the outfall itself from the property boundary out into the public domain, and let them manage the stormwater inlet and the pipe that's under their parking lot.
Is this the notebook they gave me that I gave you to give to Dennis?
The notebook.
It's made it around and around and around.
For like 3 years mm-hmm. now. Didn't they want to try to hook up to stormwater west of their complex?
So they did a project in 21, and that's where it kind of hit my radar, was they did a project to rebuild their amenity center, and they were redirecting some gutter flow and whatnot, moving things around. And so they filed with St. John's River Water Management to permit this. And when the permits came in to us to review, I immediately wrote a letter stating that, you know, you are now altering your stormwater collection, which ultimately goes to a manhole and then goes out to the beach outfall. And so I denied the permit and wrote in there that, you know, you don't have any provision for being able to maintain this outfall going forward. It is one of two private outfalls. We have two private outfalls, one at Vista Del Mar and one at the Hampton Inn on the north end of town. They have another private outfall. Both of those, of 29 outfalls we maintain in the city, those two are considered private by everything that we've got. I've got all kinds of paperwork that shows back to when we did a cost share with them when it was all installed and or upgraded. So they paid for part of it. So they can't come back and say they don't have some stake in that game, because they helped pay for when it was redone back in the 90s, I believe. So they do have that. What we normally do, and the agreement that we set forward originally, was when we go out on the beach to open up those outfalls prior to rain events or whatever, we go out and open theirs as well. However, sometimes we have these pop-up storms that just show up, and then all of a sudden we're dealing with flooding problems, usually on 1st or 2nd Street, and it all travels down towards the end zones, and then ultimately we'll go out onto the beach. If we get caught with high tides, or unfortunately the king tides, and the wrong timing, we can't get out on the beach to be able to open those up. Or we'll open those up, king tide will come in, blow everything back in on top of it, and then, like this little picture here shows that they provided in this book, their parking lot floods. And so just like you were talking about the people that want to park close and don't want to walk, same thing happens here. Nobody wants to walk through the water, so they don't park in the water, and now their parking's a mess because their parking lot floods. The long and the short of it is, right square in the middle of this parking lot is where they're drained. Everything goes to that drain, and then from there it goes out to the manhole and then out to the beach. So when that outfall is plugged at the beach, the water is inevitably going to end up in their parking lot no matter what they do.
Okay, but going back to my question, they seem to think that they could hook into stormwater west of their complex. So why can't they do that?
Because there is no infrastructure. We have one pipe. It's kind of a weird scenario. I don't have a good map to be able to show you, but there is like one stormwater piece that goes directly across the street from their property into the driveway of the condos that are across the street. It goes southbound and then goes between the condos to kind of become into a stormwater lake that ultimately goes into another pond, and it kind of keeps on carrying out. We have all of that infrastructure is ours, but it's not accommodated to be able to take all of that water for that size of a complex. Because at one point in time, someday, some long time ago, somebody decided to not have an end zone there and let them develop that whole big entire area. That's the time when there's no outfall there for us to maintain.
Is the outfall right at the end of 25th?
Oh, it's right near their club. There's not a street there.
The corner. Well, 25th doesn't have an end zone, but it ends at First Street or Ocean or whatever it is.
I don't know if I have the best of map to look at.
I was just wondering if it was on the north corner or the south corner.
It's on the south.
It's on the south, which is 25th.
I think it's on the south because I went out there and looked at it.
Theirs is actually, the outfall itself is at 23rd.
North.
But 23rd stops, and then this parking lot that's on the front of this book is right like near 23rd. And their outfall is actually over here, right at where 23rd would be, because it's kind of...
Do you see a solution?
I mean, the same solution that we agreed to already in the conversations that happened between their attorney and our attorney back and forth was the same agreement we made, is anytime we go out on the beach, we're going to open up their outfall if we can. We don't treat them any different than anything else. If we go to the north end and work our way, if we get caught, we don't make it. I mean, it is what it is. So we do that every time we go. But it's just every once in a while, the nuisance storm will come up, and then they'll have an issue in their parking lot, and they immediately call, when can you get us unplugged because our parking lot's flooded? Well, if we can't get on the beach at that particular time, or we're not going out on the beach, and that's kind of been the agreement, if we're going out to clean up our stuff, we'll clean up theirs as well.
What about extending the outfalls? We're doing the other outfalls.
This one's already been extended. One of the ones that we did when we did those a year ago. This one was actually extended. As a matter of fact, this one's probably extended too far, and after they do the re-nourishment, we're probably going to have to come in, dig it up, and cut it off because somebody's going to catch us being maybe 20 extra feet farther than what we're supposed to be, because we're only supposed to be at the edge of the water line. Well, this particular one goes significantly farther than where the water line's at.
Is there any room for a stormwater lift station of any sort there?
You got to have somewhere for it to go, and then, of course, you've got to have some place for it to be treated. So it opens up that can of worms to, because I would love to say, because our chiller systems are running on an internal well, and they're pulling the water to run their chiller systems, and then that's what they're actually feeding into a 4-inch pipe that goes westbound, and it's about a half a 4-inch pipe full of constant flow all the time that goes into that stormwater station that is to the west of them. But everything else on that entire section of property, which is a pretty good sized complex, all goes to this one drain here and then ultimately goes to the outfall. And this is the low spot. So no matter what happens, everything inside their property is going to flood this first, and then it's going to go from here to the manhole and then from the manhole out.
Well, and they're getting runoff from Ocean into their parking lot too. So they're
very
getting...
little.
Really?
They say that they're getting runoff on First Street, but to climb the berm that they have, you have to have close to 2 feet of water in First Street before it's actually going to crest over and start running into this parking lot. So, and I've heard there have been storms that has happened. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen any since I've been here, but that doesn't mean it doesn't happen. But if it happens here on a heavy rain like that, it's happening all of First Street all at the same time. This is not going to be an isolated problem. It's going to be all of First Street. Mm-hmm.
And you bring up a good point, Councilor Jansen, and that is that at some point, a long-term goal for the city, I mean, we're talking decades from now, may be to eliminate the stormwater outfalls, or we may be prohibited at some point from having stormwater outfalls. At that point, we'll have to be considering major stormwater projects that install a new series of lift stations, stormwater lift stations along First, and pump water from east to west. And there'll need to be studies and larger pipes and everything else. But that's not right now.
We actually have that going from...
Right, we have...
where is it?
The CRA district.
Yeah, from basically Beach Boulevard south to 16th, including where the new stuff that they're doing right now, it's all being improved. So every place that we are digging up right now on 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, all those are currently going out to the ocean. As that project goes through, they're going to tie all that into the trunk line and provide it to the west. So the long-term answer is at some point in time, I'm going to be here, or somebody's, not necessarily me, is going to be here, and we're going to be talking about everything south of 16th, because that's as far as we've gotten to be able to collect the water is from 16th. So this is at 23rd. You have to collect, you know, you have to start somewhere and then begin the process to figure out how do you collect it, and then how do you, where do you get to it, you know, because it's got to go to the either the central basin or the south basin or to the ocean outfall to be able to get out. So,
and those will be very large, very costly, and long time type projects. When you take a look at the project that we have under contract right now, it came in at just under $30 million, and it was a 900-day completion period.
Right.
So that's the magnitude of the projects that we're talking about.
I would say, to your original comment about doing a letter, it may be as simple as a letter. I would say that we better make sure we have some teeth in that letter, based on everything I'm hearing and seeing. Yeah. Maybe run it by our attorney when he gets seated and have him take a look at it and go, well, we better dot an I or cross a T here or there to make sure that we cover ourselves.
I think that's kind of what happened. They sent us a letter. Ms. Robinson and myself crafted a letter back. They took offense to her letter. So then they cranked another letter back. So then she cranked another letter back. And then she left. And then they cranked another letter back, which is where it ultimately hit Mike's desk, was when they had sent another response back to Ms. Robinson. She had left. Nobody had responded for some length of time. So then they rejuvenated the conversation, which is ultimately what led us to today.
Yep.
So we've kind of outlined in everything we've got, even the permit, like I said, that they did in December of 20 for when they wanted to do all this tie-in stuff. You know, because I started right then saying you need to come up with a better plan to how are you going to address this problematic flooding in your parking lot. Because it's going to come a day with us cleaning out outfalls, we don't need to clean out the outfalls because we're going to be reversing so many of them. It's getting fewer. Every time one of these big projects like the downtown projects gets completed, there's three or four more off the list that we're not having to go out on the beach to open up. So it's going to get fewer and farther between that we go out on a beach to do maintenance, which is going to become a problem for them because every time it's about to rain, they want us to go out and clean them up. And we haven't cleaned up the one, to just to give you an idea, Hampton, the other private one, hasn't been opened in 2 years because the water is not collecting a large area of water.
I think we all can expect a certain amount of nuisance that comes with storms. Do they have is it like a standing water problem for months on end, or does it clear out when the storm passes and like the rest of us?
There's doesn't, but that's simply because it all funnels, and this is their low spot. Their low spot's in their parking lot. So their issue is going to be when we do end up with some stormwater down there and we're talking to them, they're going to be forced to have to deal with their stormwater somehow. And that means they're probably going to have to create a pond. I don't know where, but they're going to have to capture this water before it can be released into the city system. Even if we build a brand new $30 million system down there, they still have to capture their water and hold it before they release it to the city. I mean, part of everything we do for all the development is you have to capture your fair share of water. You have to hold it for a particular time period before it flows out into the city system. Otherwise, everything gets inundated and when we would be flooded every time it rains. And I'm not sure what their answers will be when we ever get to that spot, but obviously with $30 million projects, it's going to take time before we're looking at that particular area and how far down are we going to be in and what are the costs are going to be. Yep. A lot more questions than there are answers when it comes to that. I mean, as far as what we do for normal routine maintenance, we go out, we go to the end of the pipe, we open the end of the pipe, we kind of create a, I don't want to say a ditch because that's not the right word, but we kind of create a place for the water to flow out of the pipe and then ultimately get to the ocean. And that's all we do. Make sure there's not in problematic with the sea turtle people. Make sure there's no big piles of sand. We try to get all that all smoothed out, so that the water will flow. So as long as that stays open, it's not necessarily a problem. It's just a matter of when we get caught with these storms, you know, we get to them, but sometimes they're going to be hollering because their feet are going to be wet walking to their car before we get it cleaned out potentially.
Comfort level with putting together a letter agreement. Seeing some heads nod. We'll continue to work in that direction then. Thank you on that item. Moves us on to item number 3.
It was easier than I thought. It was easier. If anybody does want to ever take a view at this, give me a shout.
I'll be more than happy to share it.
Next item we have on here.
Whoever's done reading it, let me know.
Next item we have on here is just a brief overview of some of the terms and conditions that we would put into a lease agreement with the VLSC for the use of the old fire station over by the water plant and fire station 71. Just wanted to walk through these with you. Jason and I did have conversations with the president of VLSC along with another board member, and they seemed amenable to all of this as well, but we want to make sure council thinks we're going in the right direction. The first is with regards to rent. We're basically looking at this as a zero cost. I think contractually we have to make it like $10 a year, which if they hand us a $10 bill, so be it, we'll give them a receipt. The lease term that we're looking at is to do it as year to year. So that way, if at some point we end up with a CIP project to do some construction in that activity, they can get an idea of how much longer they'll be able to use the buildings for. Let's see, the next big item that we had on there was termination of the agreement. The city would be allowed to terminate with 90-day notice, but they'd be allowed to terminate with 30-day notice. The thought process behind that, and we'll talk about it with regards to the as-is for the maintenance of the building. If something were to happen to that building, what we're proposing in our draft lease is that the city would not be responsible for any type of reinvestment in that building. We were certainly on a path where at some point in the future we probably would have looked to actually demolish it. So if there is, let's say, a roof repair that's needed, the city would not be putting money in towards the roof repair. If VLSC wants to repair it, they can do so at their own expense. If, however, whatever is needed is too much money for them, they'd be able to walk away with a 30-day notice and not have to worry about putting money into the building. Permitted uses, when we took a look at the building, they very much honed in on using it specifically for storage and not for any type of professional office space. Our fire marshal and building official had created two lists, one of improvements that were needed if it was going to be used for just storage, and the other if it was going to be used for professional office space with some level of habitability based on the current condition of the building.
Do you know how expensive the list of changes were?
It's not that great. There are some electrical outlets that need new faceplate covers. If they're going to park a vehicle in the bay, there needs to be an exhaust system along with a carbon monoxide sensor. And I think they needed emergency exit signs at key locations. So Maurice Rudolph, who's an engineer by trade, looked at the list, walked the building with Jim Emery, the president, and said, all of this is doable if we want to use it for storage. If they wanted to make it habitable, that's where it gets a little trickier.
But could they, like I know we've been kind of moving them around with their truck parking location. Will they be able to park their truck there, even if it's outside?
Their desire is to park the truck there, preferably inside. We have given them authorization to park at Wingate at this point. And they had been parking down at Sunshine Park.
Yeah.
But basically, this is where they'd like the vehicle to ultimately be. So if they can get it in on that site, that's where they'd like to be. They'd be responsible for all utilities associated with the building. Fire and other hazards. Normally there's a clause that we have in our lease agreements that say we reserve the right to rebuild the premise if an act of God does something that substantially damages it. In this instance, we've changed it a little to where the leased premise or the major part thereof are destroyed by fire, lightning, storm, or other casualty. The lessor, which is us, at its option may terminate the lease ineffective and immediately. And that's because if it's destroyed to the point where they say they're not putting money into it, and we say we're not putting money into it either, let's just terminate the lease, and at that point we take the building down. But it would have to be something pretty big, like a lightning strike or a fire or something. And those are pretty much the high-level terms and conditions that we were looking at. Wanted to see how y'all felt about that before we start putting a bow and cross T's and dot I's and bring something back to you for formal consideration.
Are we going to allow them to put a logo, insignia, anything like that outside the building?
We did not talk about that. Preference from council?
Okay. I'm good with it. With approval. With it. I mean, I don't want...
With approval?
Yep. As long as it's consistent with our... Yeah.
It's probably a good thing.
Modifications inside?
If they want to make...
Permissible at their expense?
Permissible at their expense and provided the appropriate permitting is pulled.
Up to and including using the second bay for storage?
Yes.
Because I think that was sort of built out a little bit now or something, but...
The second bay was basically filled in for...
Probably difficult to take apart, but...
It just depends on whether they need more utility storage or bay storage, but that's something they're going to talk about and see if it makes sense to do. Going in the right direction?
Yes.
Okay. I've got two minor items to go over with you that are not on the agenda for tonight, but I thought that we should discuss them anyways. The first is the Flood Coalition. American Flood Coalition. There, I believe, are three council members that are members of the American Flood Coalition and likely received invitations to attend their annual conference in Washington, D.C. in the month of May, I believe. Molly reached out to find out how this works, and she found out through the American Flood Coalition that they made an oops. The oops is that they only meant to invite one person from the city of Jacksonville Beach. So with that being said, our intention is to put an item on the agenda for the next available meeting and let the council determine who will be the one representative go representing the city of Jacksonville Beach. Their preference is that the chief elected official go, which would be the mayor. But obviously, we've not discussed this with you. We don't know what your calendar looks like and if you want to go. And clearly, if you don't...
I'm available and I would like to attend.
Okay.
Who are you three?
The three are Fernando, Sandy, and Chris are all members of the American Flood Coalition. So we will set up that item. If anything happens between now and the approval, or if you want, we can even set it up that if something happens to you, the vice mayor can go in your place.
And it's paid for, so it's not
right.
at a cost to the city. It's paid for by the American Flood.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean...
Well, they,
which is
they,
great.
They
yeah.
indicated they pay for travel and hotel. They didn't mention anything about incidentals or food.
They cover all meals. All okay. meals for the
oh,
time of the...
Good.
Yeah.
The final thing I had on my list to go over with you was with regard to House Bill 1365 and Senate Bill 1530. If you have not had a chance to read those two pieces, well, they're both the same, but this is the... anti-camping law that was recently passed through both the Senate and the House and is now heading to the governor's desk for signature. This came out really late in the game, flew under the radar, and the next thing you knew it was getting approved and moving on to the governor's office. The language that's contained in House Bill 1365 leads to a lot of questions about enforcement at the local level. It basically indicates that you cannot allow for urban camping within your jurisdiction without it being approved for a maximum of 1 year, and it must meet all conditions for potable water, sanitary sewer, health and safety, etc. The flip side of that is if you don't have that established as a formal urban camping location, then it's not allowed, period. And you must take enforcement actions against those people who violate. And it even goes so far as to specify what legal action can be taken against the municipality that allows it to continue for more than 5 business days after having been put on notice by anyone to include a local resident or a business owner. In speaking with Chief Smith, it's very likely that the three beach police chiefs as well as Sheriff Waters are gonna have to get together to talk about this. Because if this ends up in a rash of arrests of homeless people who are trying to sleep in public and they shouldn't be, they're all going to get dropped off downtown at the jail. And then at that point, they become the sheriff's issue, and the sheriff's going to say, I don't want them to just keep getting dropped off at my door. So this is really going to force some issues of how to handle this, and it's going to force some intergovernmental coordination as well. and we'll see where it goes. But I would invite all of you to take a read of that legislation if you haven't already done so. It's kind of alarming, some of the language that's in there. And by the way, if we are put on notice and don't do it within 5 days, not only are we subject to all of the, to reimbursing the individuals who took the action against us, but we can also be held punitively as well. So it's like you have to take care of this issue if it's pointed out to you. On that note, as the mayor pointed out, it kind of fell off the agenda, but that's because we had some printing issues. Are there any committee report outs that anyone would like to speak to?
Yes. So we had a pension board meeting. We took a little dip in the last quarter, I think it was. Dropped down to about roughly 84% funded because we had several people that had retired. Yep. And although the forecast looking forward looks pretty good, and we're still pretty healthily funded. Yep, not gonna worry.
Anybody else have anything to report out on?
I would just mention, well, I know you all got my updates about the vacation rental bill, which, anyway. There's some other bills that, you know, I know Heather was following the residential building permits, mm-hmm. that passed, and that, I think, changes the shot clock, right, for
Correct.
Approvals. And then the Love Local Glitch bill, which I forwarded it to Cliff because I had shared it with Mike, and he had raised a concern about some language in there, but I haven't heard back from Cliff. But we're just trying to wrap our heads around what, you know, does this glitch bill cause any problems for us or not? So I haven't heard anything from Cliff about it.
Cliff did reply to me on it, indicating that he did not see an issue with it, that the first language would take precedence in referencing height limits established within a local development code. So he says once it's referenced there, it should carry on in prominence through the rest of the document.
Okay. But I wanted to let everybody know, if you didn't know this, the League of Cities is having a post-legislative session webinar on March 19th from 2 to 3:30. We'll probably be packed with items. So,
from our chair, sovereign immunity is dead for this year, but it will be back next year. You can rest assured on that.
So. And I heard that it would be back, like,
with vengeance.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
I think it always comes back that way, but I think the reality sets in somewhere mid-legislative season, and they realize that millions is not going to work for smaller communities. So, but it will come back.
The limit on the utility transfer thing that failed.
That
right?
failed. Yep. Yep. It did fail.
Yeah. Also, I've got an announcement. I was selected to be on the Florida Municipal Loan Committee for the Florida League of Cities. So I go through orientation next week to learn what that's all about.
Let us know.
Yeah. Find out. What is that?
Their first quarterly meeting of this year is held at the Omni, and they're paying for all the expenses to travel there. So not that there's much for me because it's an easy drive.
The Omni up in Fernandina?
Yes, cool. But they each quarter it's in a different location. So.
Fernando may want you to get him a bow tie from the shop up there.
Oh, yes, that's right, a peacock bow tie.
Okay.
$150.
I make a note
brackish.
Of that.
A brackish tie.
But I do want to thank Mike, particularly because he scrambled right there at the end a lot when there was a lot going on, and then especially when Jack was approached by, I guess it was Chris Spencer, asking for the city's position on the vacation rental bill, and so Mike and I worked on some language for that, and
I
appreciate you doing that, you know, so.
You scramble. You should just set aside the last week of session just to be available for scrambling.
No, you have to set aside all of session because in addition to working through PAC and our council members that are on the different committees, I also sit on a consortium of 24 city managers from across the state that works directly with Florida League of Cities to determine impacts behind the scenes. so that the Florida League of Cities can understand what the implications of these proposed legislations are that maybe don't come out from the political perspective.
But that's longer term. I'm talking when you're texting with Senator Yarborough and he's on the Senate floor and you're watching him read your text. Like, that's different.
I get it. That is different. But it's not uncommon that we'll have someone from FLC shoot us a text or an email saying, can I get a handful of people to give me a quick analysis on this proposed amendment, like right now, because it's going to the floor in 60 minutes. And we'll take a look at it and provide some feedback. It's just, it's the entire season. It's gotten a little hectic.
Well, any indication on when the timing of it going to the governor's desk is?
I haven't heard anything yet, but I will say both.
And then it starts the clock once it's on the governor's desk, too. If he doesn't sign it by a certain number of days, it automatically dies.
I wonder if he'll just let it die.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I will say that Senator Yarborough was great, and Rep. Michael was really great, too. And then also Tracy Davis, she was reaching out to me, too. And actually, I read that she's now been selected to be the head of the Democratic caucus, I think, in 2 years or something. So anyway.
For 26, I think is what it's
26,
discussed.
And all the power that yields.
Yeah. Are we, can I ask if we're getting warm on an estimate for 13th Avenue South?
He's going to have to check with his engineers.
I'll put that on my book.
They had some computer issues in Public Works that were not resolved until last week.
Sure, I understand. What's that?
You were going to follow up on the BLSC or on the life saving station on the report, if we have the report back, what it says, what we're going
to. With regards to the fire?
No,
the structure. I'll have to find out from procurement. I know Karen's got that on her list since last operation.
I think
it's what
I thought it was.
Well,
back.
They were talking about two different
fire things.
Yeah.
Two
so
different.
Maybe there was a structural thing hadn't even been back yet.
Yeah, the fire thing. They started the remediation last Tuesday for the fire, and they had originally said it could take up to 6 weeks, but we all think that it's going to be done sooner than that. So that will. I'm looking back to Jason, but he's not.
Sorry, I wasn't listening.
No, that's okay.
I thought he was actively avoiding eye contact.
The fire remediation at the lifeguard station. They estimated up to 6 weeks, but we think it may be sooner than that.
Yeah, they started. They worked through the weekend. It's going well. We asked them for a definite timeline. They couldn't give that to us today. So we hope that it's going to be less than the 6 weeks.
And then the second part was the follow-up on some of the structural issues where they had done the tappings and found some hollow spots. I will have to find out on that one.
I think the larger question is, when are we going to be able to put the branding back up on the building? And that was the holdup. So,
yeah.
That was sort of when I was asking the original question, if that's going to be another bringing 6 months or a year, then let's just move forward. And
last year when we said, let's get it done by opening of the beaches, we didn't think we meant 2024.
That, right?
I was thinking 24.
I knew it was optimistic at the time, but I didn't realize quite how.
And lastly, but not leastly for me, have we heard any more about the property at the corner of Seagate and 10th?
I think they dropped it.
Yeah, they withdrew.
They withdrew?
The school.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Dean Ledford took it back to Duval County Public School Administration, and after they all kicked it around, they said, nah, we're going to go in a different direction.
Okay.
They probably looked up what could happen with those old transformers and all that. Mitigation's on us, now we're good.
Yeah. For the next council meeting, we have two items on there so far. One of them will be the JBOR annual report presentation. And the second one will be an analysis of, assuming it gets signed by the governor, an analysis of the STVR legislation and how it affects our existing ordinance that we have in place. Because there are certain portions of our ordinance that may be superseded.
Did the ban on gas blowers make it in on the, what was it tied to the camping ordinance? They tied it to a weird one.
It was tied to the appropriations bill. So for those of you that did not hear, the city of Winter Park approximately 18 months ago, adopted an ordinance that banned gas-powered leaf blowers in their community, but would not go into effect until after the November 2023 elections. Some would say that was strategic so that people who voted for it were no longer on their council. But needless to say, once they got past the first of the year, there were a lot of unhappy businesses and a lot of unhappy individuals in Winter Park. And they complained quite loudly and quite strongly to the legislature. And the legislature had their multi-page appropriations bills for all sorts of funding across the state. They added a clause through an amendment at the bottom that said, if you have adopted a leaf blower ban, then you are not eligible to receive state appropriations.
This is why the state comes down on some cities.
That was their way of dealing with it.
Hammering.
Yeah, I look forward to another session when they decide to focus on something besides local.
Mm-hmm.
I think I heard they were going to do the ban on the Mountain Dew.
All right, on that note.
On that note, yeah.
Anybody have anything else for the good of the order?
My only request would be, like, if we're going to, depending on what happens with the vacation rental bill, but in the next meeting, maybe also get some information about the residential building permit bill and how that would affect us, or if maybe it doesn't, I don't know, but...
Well, and it was handy when we had Erin come last time. Maybe we have just set that up again or have her...
Yeah, I think we should. Yeah, absolutely.
I think that was a good recap meeting. It was later because at this point, until everything gets signed.
Well, and you know, Erin can present, but she won't necessarily be able to say what the impacts are to us and our existing operations. Mm-hmm. She can only tell you what the legislation says. Our staff would be the one to say, here's how it affects us based on what we do today.
And I think that would be... That would be good, something good mm-hmm. for us to do on a regular basis mm-hmm. after session is mm-hmm. to have some staff in.
Those items will pencil in for April, but depending on if and when they're signed, they may or may not stay on there for April.
I don't see a lot being done by April.
Well, that will conclude our briefing for tonight. See you all next Monday at our regular council meeting. Thank you.